सेवया। भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदातिस्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते। तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो राम राम हरे हरे। वर्ण वर्स नंबर ट्वेंटी थ्री वे कंप्लीटेड। First of all, like one cannot force somebody to actually may. The principle, the lesson from the Vasp is that like whatever consciousness a person is absorbed in, whatever a person is absorbed in, he can that kind of a body. But in regards to actually when we try to force upon somebody, then it will backfire after some time. Then people will actually go to the, because of that negative impression of trying to create fear in that person, you will actually go to the other extreme.
here the insect is afraid of wasp.
The insect is, the lesson we should take is not like force Krishna consciousness upon others. The lesson is like whatever consciousness we are absorbed in, we will get that kind of body. So that is the lesson. So we should not take inspiration to actually force people on somebody. Because
I said create the situation, for example, the devotee of children. You are not forcing, but you make in such a way they are always around that consciousness till they get the full knowledge.
Yeah, in the sense,
by the childhood, by the 12 years.
Yeah, that atmosphere is good, but the point is that we have to create some discipline in raising the children. But Maharaj mentioned, even the discipline also is we make it as a pleasurable experience. So otherwise they might think that they may always when they grow up, they may always think Krishna consciousness with a certain this one. And because many people in the beginning years of ISKCON, they try to deal with the children in that way. They try to actually forcibly make them practice something. And then many of them actually, they developed a very negative attitude. And that Gurukul case, etc. So the principle of, it's not that we pamper them. We show affection and also we show some discipline. But even a person can actually come to the platform of love of Godhead. In order to come to that, one has to come to enter through the door of fear. From fear, a person comes to gain and then duty and then this. When a person enters through the door of fear, it's we talk about certain principles. So if you don't do this, certain reactions will come. We may educate them about the law of karma. But that is not even that discipline. That fear or discipline which you try to enforce, that should be accompanied with affection and this one. Even the discipline should also be made in a pleasurable manner. That's the principle I heard. Because it requires a great maturity how to actually apply in a particular. So such a. have been going through this. So although it is actually Uddhava Gita is philosophical, but just try to go through the verses and the purports at your home. Each verse, the more I read it, it is so profound, and when you try to meditate upon, it contains so much of philosophical lessons. So we will continue from the verse number 24. So in this particular chapter, who are the gurus which we discussed so far? What were the gurus in this particular chapter? The first guru was Kurara bird. What was the lesson from the Kurara bird? Yes. Exactly. When you give up something which you are very much attached to, then you can get great happiness. That bird was carrying a piece of meat. A stronger bird came to attack him. The bird gave up that meat. And what is the second guru? Second guru is child. So, what do we learn from that? Child, what is the nature of the child, and what did the Avadhut Brahmana learn from that? What is the nature of the child?
Child is careless.
Child is careless. Huh? Yeah, but what is explained in the chapter, I don't think this is mentioned. So at least I expect you to go through the translation and during the week.
Free from anxiety.
I think the lesson is a little different. Free from anxiety, the child does not care for honor or dishonor. So similarly, he says that when a person is in a self-laced platform, a person is actually completely free from anxiety. He is actually he does not care for honor or dishonor. He is he's situated in a spiritual happiness. And two extremes of a persons are described. Both the two persons are completely ecstatic and happy. One is a ignorant fool. Ignorant fool, one who has not studied anything for the exam, he'll be completely happy because he knows that he's going to fail. And second is the self-realized person, he'll also be completely happy. Because he is situated on the spiritual platform, he is not affected by anything going on in the bodily platform. So the child is not actually a self-realized platform, but the child is the activities of the child appear similar to the person in the self-realized platform. Because the child is happy and carefree.
Free from three modes of
So he is observing that nature of the child, and then learning this lesson of how when a person is situated on the spiritual platform, then one is actually completely carefree. And what is the third guru? Third guru is Kumari, the unmarried girl. And what is the lesson?
Avoid association of materialistic people.
Yogis.
Yeah. Avoiding association of materialistic people, but in particular,
yogis should avoid any other yogis.
Yeah.
And this bhakti should avoid other than non-devotees.
Gyanis and yogis should avoid the association of other gyanis and yogis.
Well,
so why gyanis are told to avoid the association of other gyanis? What is that?
Bengals.
Gyanis, they are speculating. They keep speculating.
Yeah.
So that if you associate them, then you also tend to speculate like this.
No. Because that is not the reason.
The definition of gyani is that he is proved to be gyani if he gives a higher argument.
Something different from others.
So
then that will result in quarrel. So because gyanis, each gyani is supposed to give a different philosophy. So if they stay together, then there is bound to be quarrel. So therefore, a gyani is supposed to stay alone. You should not associate even with the other gyanis. So therefore, what did that Kumari do? That
bangles.
She removed the bangles. She removed it till she had only two bangles in each hand, and then even that was making sound, and then she removed the one bangle also. So for the gyanis and yogi, they should avoid the association of other gyanis. But for the bhaktas, one should stay in the association of devotees that is equivalent to
staying alone.
I mentioned that point. Eating only prasadam is equivalent to actually fasting, as Prabhupada mentioned. And what is the next guru, fourth guru? Arrow maker. What is the lesson from the arrow maker?
Fixing of mind. Absorption.
Yeah, fixing the mind. Fixing the mind on Krishna. Or absorption. Controlling the mind as the fourth guru. And fifth guru?
Snake.
Yeah, snake. What is the lesson from the snake?
Snake doesn't create its own home.
Snake actually does not build its own home, and it actually occupies the homes of others. because we should not literally take this the sense that oh, there's no need of home. But what is the point which is being emphasized in the purport?
The great sages should not think about the should not go where there is a pre-planned facilities are available.
Yeah. It's mentioned that Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur says that the materialists, they are inventing lot of technology and like they are creating facilities. But the devotees, you take advantage of that to use it in the service of Krishna. So they don't actually put so much of endeavor to create technology early to do all this Ugra Karma. Whatever others are doing, they take advantage of that. They just focus on the service to Krishna, and whatever others have created, they use that to actually engage them in the service of Krishna. You remember, that was the point, I think. 15th and 16th verse, na? Yeah, there is another, no, there is one more guru. It's 9th chapter, okay. Yeah. So, after the, in the snake, there is one more lesson, I guess. There is one more lesson from the snake. The saint for the snake. Acha, that's mentioned. Okay. Yeah, saintly person should remain alone and constantly travel without any fixed residence. Being alert, he should remain secluded and should not act in a way he is not recognized. That is all. And then the next lesson, next guru is spider. Yeah, from spider, like what is the lesson? Supreme Lord creates this world from his own energy, and then he only actually annihilates this universe. He only winds up the universe. And then what is the next guru? Wasp. So from wasp we learned that. What is the lesson from wasp?
Same color.
By focusing on the tormentor, he later becomes that.
By focusing, he becomes changes color according to the attention.
Yeah, one insect, like a more powerful insect, enters the place where the wasp is staying. And the wasp becomes very fearful. Wasp is constantly thinking of that insect, it will actually devour him, and then he is constantly thinking about that. And then out of fear, and then when the wasp leaves the body, then actually becomes that insect. So the lesson is that Yamyam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Tejat Yante Kalevaram Tam Tam Yeveti Kaunte Sadatat Bhava Bhavita. Whatever state of consciousness you have at the time of death, you will get that kind of body in the next life. So, now the next lesson is, yeah, this is the last guru, the 30th, from the 30th verse. 30th, na?
24.
Sorry, 24, okay. एवं गुरुभ्य एतेभ्य येषामे शिक्षिता मतिः स्वात्मोपशिक्षितां बुद्धिं शृणु मे वदत प्रभो.
O king, from all the spiritual masters I have acquired great wisdom. Now please listen as I explain what I learned from my own body.
So from 24 to 27 he is giving the lesson which he has learned from his own body. Just again recap, the gurus explained in this chapter are first is the Kurara bird, and second is
child,
and third is
Kumari,
and fourth is arrow maker, fifth is
snake,
sixth is spider, and seventh is wasp, and this is the eighth guru, that is one's own body. So we'll recite the next verse. Deho gurur mama virakti viveka hetur bibratsma svatva nidanam satatartyudarkam tatvanyanena vimrishami yata tatapi parakyam ityavasito vicharamya sanga.
The material body is also my spiritual master because it teaches me detachment. Being subject to creation and destruction, it always comes to a point painful end. Thus, although using my body to acquire knowledge, I always remember that it will ultimately be consumed by others, and remaining detached, I move about this world.
So deho gurur, this material body is my guru. Virakti viveka hetu, because it teaches me detachment and viveka, discrimination. Bibratsma sattva nidanam satatarti udarkam. I mean, the body, it supports creation and destruction, but the final result of the material body is suffering. Satatarti udarkam. The final result is actually suffering. Tatvani anena vimrishami yata tatapi. Says that as I discern this truth by the body with its senses, I engage in bhakti using the body and senses. But convinced that the body is fit for the dogs and jackals, I wander in the world without attachment to the body. Vimrushami means as I contemplate about the truth of this body, as I contemplate the truth of the body, what do? I actually engage the body to perform devotional service. And parakyam iti avasitu. Avasitu means being convinced about, what is he convinced? Parakyam. Parakyam means this body actually belongs to others. Means ultimately the body will be consumed by either dogs or jackals or insects, whether it is buried or cremated or just left like that. Being convinced that the body ultimately it belongs to others, what do? Vicharami asanga. I wander in this world without attachment to the body. So basically he is saying that the body is described as the virakti viveka. It is teaching him detachment and viveka, discrimination. So next verse. So one thing is that Vishnu Chakravarti explains in the purport, one should not think that the body, since it is a guru, is permanent. Like in the case of a guru, what do you sing in the Guru Puja? Chakshudan Dilo Jai Janme Janme Prabhu Sai. That the spiritual master is given the eyes of transcendental knowledge. I worship him birth after birth. But in the case of this particular guru, in the form of the body, this body is actually impermanent. Although it is a guru, but this guru is actually impermanent. So that is a lesson. So we use the Vishnu Chakravarti says that one should actually, he explains that a great devotee, this body is a guru for a person because he is learning detachment and discrimination. But when we engage the body to perform devotional service for hearing and chanting, then a person becomes attached to the Lord's rasa. A person becomes attached to the Supreme Lord in the form of one of these rasas. And he becomes completely colored with the rasa. But on the other hand, if a person becomes simply attached to the body, then such a person actually will end up will meet with suffering. So he says that just like for in the case of a tongue, like when the tongue tastes ghee and other substances, the tongue actually does not mix with those items. But when the tongue eats, like when you take say halwa or some sabji or something like, the tongue does not mix with those substances. But when you take betel nut, because betel nut is not supposed to be taken, but I am just saying, when you take betel nut or when you take beetroot, the tongue actually mixes with that subject, mixes with that particular object, and it actually becomes colored. So similarly, he says that so one may use the body, but one should not become attached to the body. Otherwise, one will fall under the control of the body. So one should use the body. The example is that just like tongue does not become tongue does not get colored when a tongue eats some halwa or some ghee or some sabji or some rice. So similarly, one should use the body without becoming attached to the body. So that is the example which is given. Next verse. Jayatma jarta pashubhritya. We will recite together because I just want, otherwise I would cover more verses. Jayatma jarta pashubhritya grihapta vargan kushnati yat priyachikirshaya vitanvan svante sakrichramavarudda danasadeha srishvasya bijam avasidati vrikshadharma.
A man attached to the body accumulates money with great struggle to expand and protect the position of his wife, children, property, domestic animals, servants, homes, relatives, friends, and so on. He does all this for the gratification of his own body. As a tree before dying produces the seed of a future tree, the dying body manifests the seed of one's next material body in the form of one's accumulated karma. Thus, assuring the continuation of material existence, the material body sinks down and dies.
So, the 26th and the 27th verse, the Avadhut Brahmana is teaching, although the body is the one of the best among the gurus, but he says, when you become attached to the body, although the body teaches virakti and viveka, but when a person becomes attached to the body, you lose discrimination and detachment. You lose the discrimination and detachment. Usually when we know, we are supposed to be attached to the spiritual master. How much you are attached to the spiritual master, whether you make the advancement. But although this body is a spiritual master, but with this spiritual master, you should not become, when you become attached to this spiritual master, you lose the knowledge of detachment and discrimination. So he says that, he's putting forward a question. If the body is the best of the gurus, then why should we serve the body with detachment? So he explains by saying, although the body is the best among the gurus, but this body is an amazing guru. Because it is an amazing guru, this particular guru should be served with great detachment. Otherwise, you will lose the discrimination and detachment. If you serve this guru with attachment, you will lose actual discrimination and detachment. So you have to serve this particular guru with detachment. And Hridayan Maharaj, what is being explained in this verse is that he says that a person usually attached to the body, he accumulates money with great struggle to protect the relatives, etc. But ultimately, what happens? Swante, at the end, sa krichram avaruddha danasa deha. But at the end, with great difficulty, a person actually loses the body with its accumulating wealth. Ultimately, all these things die. and before dying, it actually creates seed for future suffering in the form of a future material body. Srishtvasya bijam. Srishtva means after creating bijam, after creating a seed for future body, just like a tree dies after actually like vriksha dharma, after producing seeds and then the tree dies. Well, like when you almost the constant theme of the like many of these gurus is actually detachment and this. So sometimes like you should not make us like irresponsible in our day-to-day life. Like sometimes, especially in the Bhagavatam, like so much of themes of detachment and these things are coming. But it is not to you should if it makes a person irresponsible, then that is not the right attitude. Like our philosophy is like the goal of life is actually love for Krishna, but our lifestyle is varnashram. When Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, the conversation between Ramananda Rai and Mahaprabhu, so when Mahaprabhu asked like so what is the ultimate goal of life, what is the first thing he said, varnashrama charavata purushena parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanya Tatosha Karanam. Simply by executing one's duties according to one's Varna and Ashram, one will actually please the Lord. So the goal is actually to execute one's duties according to Varna and Ashram. So that is the first thing he mentioned. But Mahaprabhu said, this is external. Tell me something more. So in one sense, Mahaprabhu rejected Varna Ashram. So Mahaprabhu rejected Varna Ashram as the goal of life and not as a lifestyle. So that we have to understand. Because Mahaprabhu, in a practical life, he actually, his lifestyle was based on Varnashram. He rejected Varnashram as the goal of life. The goal of life is actually Krishna Prem. So that is actually, that is being emphasized here. So, and another point which Hridayan Maharaj writes is that, he compares this guru of body with a normal benevolent teacher. Usually a benevolent teacher, he tries to teach a student by encouraging the student with affection and by trying to maybe give something pleasurable to the student. But on the other hand, this particular guru, this particular teacher of the body, how does this particular body actually teach a person? It teaches a person by causing so much of pain and misery that any common sense person cannot help being convinced of the uselessness of material life. So any common sense person cannot help being convinced of the uselessness of material life. So next verse. You can read the translation of the next verse.
A man who has many wives is constantly harassed by them. He is responsible for their maintenance, and thus all the ladies constantly pull him in different directions as each struggles for her self-interest. Similarly, the material senses harass the conditioned soul, pulling him in many different directions at once. On one side of the tongue is pulling one to arrange tasty food, then thirst drags one to get a suitable drink. Simultaneously, the sex organs clamor for satisfaction, and the sense of touch demands soft, sensuous objects. The belly harasses one until it is filled. The ears demand to hear pleasing sounds. The sense of smell hankers for pleasant aromas, and the fickle eyes clamor for pleasing sight. Thus, the sense organs and the limbs, all desiring satisfaction, pull the living entity in many directions.
So here, what is being explained is that this verse, Avadhut Brahmana explains the nature of the different senses of the body. He says each sense is actually pulling a person in different direction, and they are compared to the different wives of a person. Like if a person has many wives, and each wife is actually pulling that man to satisfy her demands. Similarly, each sense is like a wife and is actually pulling a man to satisfy its demands. So therefore, the lesson is that one should serve the body, one should serve this guru, one should serve this particular guru, that is the material body, with detachment. Like usually when we say, in the case of a guru, we say Sakshat Daritvena Samasta Shastre Yuktastata Bhavyatayeva Sadbihi Kintu Praborya Priyayeva Tasya Vande Gurusi Charanaravindam. So we worship the guru like the Supreme Personality of God. The same respect we give to the Supreme Lord. Like with great attachment, with great respect we worship. But on the other hand, with the case of this particular guru of this material body, one should, like in the case of the Supreme Lord, we offer the best of the things. When we offer worship the spiritual master like the Supreme Lord, means like we offer the like best of the things in the service of the spiritual master, in the service of the Supreme Lord. But in the case of this material body, how one should serve this particular guru? Whatever is just needed to keep the body fit, one should actually only provide that much. Only. Not the way like we worship the actual spiritual master way, giving the best of the things. So that's what Vishnu Chakravarti says, that one should merely offer without attachment the bare necessities to the guru of one's body. So we have to understand that, how to serve this particular guru. We cannot apply that verse Sakshat Daritvena literally to this particular guru. Then we will lose the actually lesson. So next verse. So the 28th and 29th verse, the Avadhut Brahmana tells the glory of the human body. Especially he is taking about the glory of human form, and is comparing with the other forms also. So it's a very beautiful verse. We can read the translation, 28th verse.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, expanding his own potency, Maya Shakti, created innumerable species of life to house the conditioned souls. Yet, by creating the forms of trees, reptiles, animals, birds, snakes, and so on, the Lord was not satisfied within his heart. Then he created human life, which offers the conditioned soul sufficient intelligence to perceive the absolute truth and become pleased and became pleased.
So this verse says that Lord, the Supreme Lord, had created so many bodies, but until he created human body, he was not satisfied. Because he felt that I have not given a facility for the living entity to pursue self-realization. And when he created a human body, by which a person can actually come to the lotus feet of the Lord, then he became satisfied. Just like even if a person is, suppose, an intelligent scientist or somebody, till he invents the best of the, suppose a person is inventing cars or something, till he invents the best of the cars, he feels a dissatisfaction, best of the PC or this one. Similarly, Supreme Lord was dissatisfied. This shows actually how the Lord was, human form of his life is actually very precious. So if one takes to Krishna consciousness, the Supreme Lord personally feels happiness and gradually reveals himself to his devotee. Because he has created for that purpose. Like suppose if we just come to know that the makers of iPhone 6, if they come to know that people are using iPhone 6 for as a paperweight, like, will they become actually happy? They'll feel like they'll feel insulted, and they will feel actually like these people don't know value of how much effort we put into actually create that. So that's why he's explaining that. And he is quoting a verse from the Vedas, which also tells us this from the Aitreya Aranyaka. Tata Tabyo Gam Anayanta Abruvan Navai Noyam Alam Iti. This verse they says that he brought the devatas a cow, but they were not satisfied. He brought the devatas a cow, but they were not satisfied. And then he brought them a horse, but the devatas were not satisfied. And then he brought them the human being, and they accepted the human. The sense how the devatas appreciated the human body. So next verse is a very important verse. This particular verse is one of the favorite verses of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we will recite this verse. You can recite after me. Labdva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavante.
Labdva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavante.
Manushyamartadamanityamapihadira.
Manushyamartadamanityamapihadira.
Turnam yate tanapate tanumrutyu yavan.
Turnam yate tanapate tanumrutyu yavan.
Nishreyasaya vishayakalu sarvatasya.
Nishreyasaya vishayakalu sarvatasya.
After many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life, which although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should quickly endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life, as long as his body, which is always subject to death, has not fallen down and died. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most abominable of species of life, whereas Krishna consciousness is possible only for a human being.
So actually each word in this verse is like very important. Like labdva sudurlabham. Durlabham itself means rare. Sudurlabham means is very, very rare. And it is obtained after bahu sambhavante, after many lifetimes. Manushyam artadam, and this human form of life is actually full of meaning. Artadam means it is of great value. It is of great value, but anityam. It is temporary, but although it is temporary, but it is of great value. And api means although. So although it is anitya, it is actually full of, it is of great value, artadam. Then how does a sober person deal with this body? Dhira. Dhira means one who has sober intelligence. Turnam yateta. Turnam yateta means like immediately, a sober person immediately, na patet. Like before the body gets old or before the body falls down, anumrutyu yavan, before the body falls down, and which is actually always subject to death. A sober person should quickly endeavor, should immediately strive for spiritual life as long as the body lives, because the body dies after being young, because the body, a person can die at any time. Nishreyasaya means like one should actually look for, endeavor for the highest, the ultimate benefit. And Vishaya Kalu Sarvatasya, one should not use it for sense gratification, because it is available in all the species, Sarvatasya. So, Hridayan Maharaj writes in the purport that, the second paragraph he writes that, in the first paragraph he says that, human form of life, a person has grave responsibility to understand the absolute truth. In the second paragraph, he talks about the importance of association of devotees. That when you cultivate Krishna consciousness under the guidance of experienced selfless devotees, then a person can attain perfection. So now the Avadhut Brahmana completes all that. With this is the last guru. with this he actually completes the answer. So he actually completes the answer which the king made in 7th chapter 29th verse. You remember that he asked the question that you are so expert and you are youthful and you are learned, but still you are acting as if like a mad person. You are acting, you are completely inactive. Why do you behave like that? So he asked that question. So he actually completes the answer to that question here. You can read the translation, 30th verse. So he basically says that I have learned from the spiritual master, so I remained situated and realized in our Supreme Lord. In this way, I wander through the world without attachment or ego. So now, so 31st verse is important. We will recite this verse. नक्येकस्माद् गुरुर्ज्ञानं सुस्थिरं स्यात्सु पुष्कलं ब्रह्मैतत् अद्वितीयं वै गीयते बहुदर्शिभिः.
Although the absolute truth is one without a second, the sages have described him in very different ways. Therefore, one may not be able to acquire very firm or complete knowledge from one spiritual master.
So here, in this particular verse, Krishna, this Avadhut Brahmana is talking about, of course Krishna is speaking this verse, he is just narrating the conversation. So Avadhut Brahmana is talking about the importance of having many gurus. That's a, there's a long purport about should you have one guru or many guru. So he is saying that the, although the absolute truth is one with the, without the second, advitiyam, brahmaitad advitiyam vai, but Giyate Bahuda Rishibihi. Rishibhi means sages. The sages have described in many different ways. Bahuda. Bahuda means in many different ways. So therefore, Nahi Yekasmad Guru Gyanam. One should not simply have one guru. Sustiram Syat Su Pushkalam. In order to have steady Sustiram, and Pushkalam means Su Pushkalam, in order to have complete knowledge, one should not have only one guru, one should have many gurus. One should have knowledge from many gurus. In order to have complete knowledge and in order to have steady knowledge. So, like, now the question is, should we have one guru or many gurus? So what is your...
Diksha guru should be one, Shiksha guru should be many.
Diksha Guru should be one and there can be many Siksha Gurus. Yeah, that is the point. But then here it is explained that he is saying that one should have many Gurus. This verse Krishna himself is saying. So how do you reconcile?
You should interpret like that.
Well, literally the verse means that one should have many Gurus.
You can learn from, I mean, anybody can, devotees can learn from
anywhere. The knowledge acquired from a spiritual master can be experienced from so many objects.
Exactly, same point. So the acharyas explained, the first point they mention is that they quote two verses from a future chapters to show that how one should have only one guru. So they explain the next chapter that Abhigyam, Madha Abhigyam Gurum Shantam Upasita. One should accept worship of a peaceful guru who knows me. And Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyashu Shreyam Uttamam. Yeah, inquisitive person should surrender to superior guru. One should have only one guru. And there are many examples of people who have accepted only one guru. Like Prabhupada accepted Bhaktivedanta Swami Thakur as guru. Even this Avadhut Brahmana himself had only one guru. There are other examples of Shvetaketu, Bhrigu, like that, their examples are given. They did not accept many gurus. So therefore, it says like, it means one should have only one Diksha Guru, but one can have many Siksha Gurus. The person who gives the mantra as the Diksha Guru, that is only one person. But we can learn the whatever we have learned from the from our one spiritual master. We can reinforce those teachings. by learning from different objects. The same teachings which we have learned from our one spiritual master, we can solidify the teaching, we can actually deepen the teaching by learning from different objects. So here it's explained, Avishna Chakotaku says that untrue, I also have accepted only one guru who gives instruction and mantra. But considering things which act as examples of what is favorable or unfavorable for performing worship, I have made many those things as my gurus. So therefore, all these things which I have explained, they are my siksha gurus. They are either teaching through by positive example or by negative example. So the exam the gurus which I explained, for example, pigeon, fish, deer, the young girl, elephant, snake, moth, kurara bird, they are gurus which actually teach what to avoid. Negative example. Bee, honey collector, pingala, they teach what to avoid and also what to accept. Huh. From bee we had actually two lessons. And other items such as earth teach what should be accepted. This is just a breakup of this one, which is explained by Sridhar Swami. It is there in the purport. You can go through it. And like one may say, like if accepting many gurus, then what kind of siksha gurus should one accept? So we have to have one diksha guru, but we can have many siksha gurus who can actually strengthen the teaching from our one diksha guru. So then, if we can have many siksha gurus, then what kind of siksha gurus should one accept? So the principle it is explained is that, should we accept siksha gurus who have got knowledge? So Vishnu Chakotaku says, yeah, that is true. We should accept siksha gurus who have knowledge, but then there may be many siksha gurus who may have knowledge, but they may have contrary philosophies. So when we take lesson from those siksha gurus, then it may contradict with what is there. If we take lessons from maybe some other sampradayas or other spiritual gurus, etc., then it will contradict with the teachings of our diksha guru. Then we should not accept those people as siksha gurus. We should accept people from the same sampradaya. Even, like for example, even when we are actually even when you are hearing from the devotees, when we hear from even from the Vaishnava Sampradaya also, if a person does not have the is not sharp, like sometimes when we hear from say other Vaishnava Sampradayas, or then one may actually get little confused about certain aspects. One should have the discrimination about what one should take, which is agreeing with the conclusions of our sampradaya. So one has to be careful about the sound vibration also, like even in hearing from actually even other Vaishnavas, maybe from other sampradayas, etc. So that's why this Brahmana, he has accepted many siksha gurus, but he has chosen to accept the siksha gurus as different objects. He did not accept the siksha gurus as different sages. There are many different sages are there. They may have different philosophies which are partly true, but they are not actually, they may not have the conclusion of Vaishnavism. Many Jaimini, like Gautama, like so many other followers of these other six systems of philosophy, they are also sages, atheistic Kapila. But he did not accept them, he just accepted the objects as the gurus. And another beautiful thing which Hridayananda Maharaj writes in the purport is that, he says, merely by hearing from many different authorities, one cannot actually learn the highest perfection of life. The proliferation of differing spiritual authorities is useful only to counteract the living entity's tendency to be grossly materialistic. Different spiritual philosophers create faith in the existence of the soul and may be accepted only at that level. Like, there may be different philosophers, they may just create faith in the how you are not the body, you are the soul. On that level, we can accept the different philosophers. But simply, if you hear more than that, we may get confused. Especially those who are non-Vaishnavas. But as will be clarified in the later verses, the spiritual master who ultimately gives perfect knowledge is one. And again, the next paragraph, again a very beautiful, very beautifully Hridayananda Maharaj is writing. He says, Jiva Goswami is commenting on this verse. Since it is commonly understood that one should accept a single spiritual master, why is he recommending to have many gurus? So he says that, as recommended by Brahman Avadhuta, one can strengthen the teachings received from one's acharya and avoid transgressing his orders by observing ordinary things in nature. One should not mechanically receive the teachings of one's guru. The devotee should be thoughtful and with his own intelligence realize in practice what he has heard from his spiritual master by observing the world around him. So this is nonsense, the summoned purport of the whole section. One should not simply mechanically hear. One should be thoughtful and realize the teachings by observing the world around. So it does not mean that we go on a sightseeing mission that I want to actually learn everything. Whatever we comes on our way, we try to learn. So in this, it does not mean, as I said, that we have to hear from others in order to strengthen the teachings. So again, the next sentence is a want. In this sense, one may accept many gurus, though not those who preach against the knowledge received from the bona fide spiritual master. In other words, one should not hear from persons like the atheistic Kapila. So again, another point is that, like, we cannot stick to the principle of I will hear only from the spiritual master. A spiritual master will be available only at a certain time. So we have to hear from other sadhus by which we can reinforce the teachings which we have learned from the spiritual master. And at the same time, that does not mean that we hear from anybody and everybody, somebody who is not a Vaishnava, like the atheistic philosophers like that.
If we are not intelligent enough, we may get confused, and so it's better not to hear from others.
Yeah,
that's what I
feel. Yeah, from other non-Vaishnavas, one should not hear.
When you meet a person, you don't know what is what he is.
Yeah, listen. Sometimes when you have to preach, like, you have to hear and then preach. But the point is that when I mean hearing means like giving a humble oral reception, like with a mood to actually follow. Like Mahaprabhu heard from Sarvam Bhattacharya for 7 days, but he actually, that by that he opened up the heart of Sarvam Bhattacharya so that when he could speak, then Sarvam Bhattacharya could actually accept. When you are preaching, sometimes we may have to listen to him in order to open up his heart. But when I mean like not hearing, that means like not paying a humble oral reception, or say going for some satsanga of somebody else. So again, the next paragraph, the same point is explained. So then again, the last paragraph in this page, it's explained that if one receives the teachings of one's acharya but keeps them locked up in his brain as theoretical dogma, one will make little advancement. Very important sentence. To develop steady, complete knowledge, one must see the teachings of one's acharya everywhere. Thus, a Vaishnava offers all respects to anyone or anything that gives him further enlightenment in the path of worshipping his bona fide acharya, who is non-different from Lord Krishna. So one should not keep the knowledge which you receive locked up in our own this one. By that one will not make much advancement. One should try to share that knowledge and one should try to see those teachings in the actually when we meet in the world around us. So that is the sum and substance of this whole section. The last two verses. So in this way now Krishna is saying, so after speaking thus, the Brahmana accepted obeisances and worship from the king and felt pleased within himself. That bidding farewell, he left exactly as he had come. So actually, Vishnu Chakotako says that this Brahmana was Dattatreya. This Brahmana who imparted knowledge to Yadu is actually Dattatreya. He quotes a verse from the second canto also. Says that King Yadu worshipped his lotus feet. Now, according to Sridhar Swami, the Avadhut Brahmana is the personality of Godhead himself in the form of Dattatreya. And this is confirmed by Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur. And then Krishna says, O Uddhava, hearing the words of the Avadhut, the saintly King Yadu, who is the forefather of our own ancestors, became free from all material attachment and thus his mind was evenly fixed on the spiritual platform. So Krishna is glorifying his forefather, Maharaj Yadu. We will go to the next chapter. Next chapter is entitled The Nature of Fruitive Activity. Dattatreya. I have heard in a purport in the Samasindhu. He preached some other philosophy. Here he is preaching the teachings which he is giving in this section, it is actually Vaishnava philosophy. But otherwise, he preached not Vaishnava philosophy. Just like Buddha preached atheism, Dattatreya also preached some non-Vedic philosophy. So therefore, we don't actually worship Dattatreya, just like we don't worship Buddha. The Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatrika Vidim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpata Eva Kalpati. This verse comes in the Bhakti Rasam Sindhu. The devotional service which disregards the Shruti and Smriti, it only creates Utpata, disturbance in the society. So in that purport, the Vishnu Chakradhar gives example. Why we don't worship Buddha? Because he preached actually rejecting the Vedas. And he also gives the example of the Dattatreya. So next chapter. So this is also a little...
Based on this learning from Guru, the experience of from the Avadhut Brahman, in our daily routine life, whenever we are dealing with materialistic conditions and we are under the influence of illusionary energy, we come across many examples. It may not be giving enlightening to others, but for us sometimes we decide that this kind of thing was happening, we will not follow this, or we will take positive way or negative way. So like that, can we take some incidents or some particular personality that Guru?
Yeah, in the sense he is teaching that.
Teaching.
Yeah, we can. That is the whole purpose of this one. Like we can Like suppose, see, you may meet somebody, even if you come across a terrorist. One devotee was saying, like he came across one person from another organization. At least they are not terrorists, but they are some philanthropic, socialistic, this one. But he was appreciating the fact, nonsense, they don't have, their philosophy is just the bodily platform, maybe nationalistic or socialistic, etc. But for that cause, they are actually so determined and they are showing so much of dedication to that cause. That devotee was saying, so for some materialistic philosophy, if this person is showing so much of determination, dedication, and we have got the highest philosophy, like today, Radha Gopinathuru spoke so wonderfully about that, Shikshashtakam prayers. The conclusion of Chaitanya Charitamrita is actually Shikshashtakam prayers. Shikshashtakam prayers is the ultimate pinnacle in the entire gamut of like the Vedic scriptures or this thing, that Mahaprabhu Shikshashtakam prayers, that is like the ultimate essence of everything. So when we have got the highest of this one, like how much dedication we should have. So in that way he was saying that he saw that person with dedication, we can learn that quality of dedication. So it is not that we accept him as guru means like we join that organization, but he's learning that quality. Like,
something for Krishna
consciousness.
That analogy of businessman, how he develops business. Devotee should also increase his business.
In this way, like when you the main thing is like the mood of the mood of having the learning disposition in all situations. So when you have the learning disposition, then you will want to actually what I can learn from him, what I can learn from him, so that I can follow my guru's instruction effectively. So we have to have that mood of learning disposition, then we can learn in all situations. So we should cultivate that mood consciously. And when you use that, because when you have the disposition, and then when you speak based on your personal example, I have learned this, not just superficially, when you actually follow this process, when you do that, then it actually appeals to the people also more.
Yes. You applied in your
Because you are speaking from your heart, from your experience. So the key thing is like to have the learning disposition in all situations. So the next chapter is the nature of fruitive activity. So I want to go through the first 20 verses in brief. This one. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Mayoditesh Avakita Swadharmeshu Madashraya Varnashrama Kulacharam Akamatma Samacharet.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, taking fruit shelter in me, with the mind carefully fixed in the devotional service of the Lord as proven by me, one should live without personal desire and practice a social and occupational system called Varnashram.
I will briefly highlight the connection between the verses in this chapter. Just maybe read over the little purports, certain important sentences. So the previous chapter, Avadhut Brahmana described the characteristics of a saintly person. So in this chapter, so therefore Krishna describes the practical means of attaining such a saintly position. That's the connection between the previous chapter and this chapter. The first verse, Krishna talks about how one should practice Varnashram. He says, Mad Ashraya, taking shelter in me through bhakti, Maya Uditesh, which is explained by me, and taking shelter in me in bhakti, which is explained by me, and while being without material desire, Akam Atma, then one should practice one's duties of varnashram. That means that the shelter should be in Krishna and not in varnashram. Like sometimes people give more preference to duties than to actually devotional service. The shelter should be in Krishna, Guru and Krishna. And with that shelter one should practice varnashram. And Hridayananda Maharaj writes, like when a person is executing the duties of varna and ashram, there may be certain rules and regulations, certain duties may not be, they may be unfavorable for devotional service. So one should actually reject those duties or those rules which are unfavorable for devotional service. Like for example, say maybe, say suppose there is Radhashtami is there. So Radhashtami is there. So say suppose for example on the same day Ganpati Visarjana something is coming. So according to your tradition, your family, you are doing with Ganpati Puja or something like that. So that, you know, answer it could be according to your family duties or something. But then on the day of Radhashtami we have to first actually coming and hearing from Maharaj and actually whatever service we have to do that. So on that day we have, because those duties are coming in way of this one, so we should actually give not preference to that, but we should give preference to this in that way. Just giving a simple example. So he's explained that there are innumerable rules and regulations in the varnashram system, and the devotee should execute those which do not contradict the process of devotional service. So therefore, one, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, one should execute the basic principles of varnashram in a way favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. So next verse, in the next verse Krishna explains how to become desireless. The previous verse explained that one should perform the varnashram duties without having material desire. So how one should have, how can a person be desireless? He says, anvikshete vishuddhatma. Anvikshete vishuddhatma means, he says that one should meditate. Anvikshete means one should see. Anvikshete, one should, by meditation on his spiritual goal, guneshu tattva dhyanena, in relation to the happiness from sense objects, the purified soul should see that all the endeavors of people who are dedicated to material enjoyment gives opposite results. So he is explaining how to become desireless by meditating on two things. What are the two things? One should meditate on a spiritual goal, and secondly, how happiness of people who are dedicated to sense enjoyment, it actually ultimately gives only opposite results. One should meditate on both, on the spiritual goal and also how material enjoyment ultimately leads to opposite goals. So when you meditate on these two things, then a person can become free from material desires. Then in the third verse, he says that the third verse, Krishna explains, spiritual results are not obtained by material senses. Or he says, in other words, material activities give only temporary results. You need a translation of third verse.
One who is sleeping may see many objects of sense gratification in a dream, but such pleasurable things are merely creation of the mind and are thus ultimately useless. Similarly, the living entity who is asleep to his spiritual identity also sees many senses objects. But these innumerable objects of temporary gratification are creation of the Lord's illusory potency and have no permanent existence. One who meditates upon them, impelled by the senses, uselessly engaged his intelligence.
So this verse explains basically when a person, just as the objects seen in dreams, suptasya vishaya loko, or even in the waking mind, they yield no spiritual results. Especially engaging in material activities does not yield give any spiritual results, since they depend on material objects. But intelligence depending on material objects using the material senses yields no spiritual results. So in this purport, what is explained is that when a person is actually separates himself from one's real self-interest, then his intelligence becomes absorbed in different types of material sense objects. And a person is not focused on spiritual life, then his intelligence is absorbed in maybe seeing some things or hearing some mundane music or tasting some foodstuffs, or his intelligence becomes absorbed in different material sense objects. So this intelligence becomes his intelligence becomes divided. That is called as divided intelligence. So such divided intelligence is impotent and cannot understand the absolute truth. And what is the opposite of the divided intelligence? One-pointed intelligence. And what is the verse? Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana bahushaka yanantasya buddhayu avyavasayina. So Krishna is talking about one-pointed intelligence. That is what is explained here. So does anybody know what is the another meaning of the word vyavasaya? Vyavasaya means profession or business. Yeah, means of earning. It also means business. So if we take the word vyavasaya as the business, usually we take only few things in our life as seriously as business. Usually money makes the lazy people busy, the frivolous people serious, and the non-conformists means the non-traditional people, they become when the money is involved, people become very serious and they become very sober and they become very busy. But on the other hand, when it comes to maybe spiritual life, people say that, oh, I don't feel like doing. But they don't, suppose when somebody is told, oh, you have to carry this 5 lakh rupees suitcase from here to there. Suitcase may be very heavy, but you won't say, I don't feel like carrying this. We don't say that. But when it comes to spiritual life, we say, oh, I don't feel like chanting, I don't feel like reading Bhagavatam, I don't feel like doing service. So why do we say, because we are on the bodily platform. So it is because of our spiritual short-sightedness, we are unable to see beyond our short-term, this immediate benefit life, our short-term life concerns to our long-term next life concerns, because of our spiritual short-sightedness. So, but when we, especially when we read, because when we hear Bhagavatam and Gita, then we become more conscious about our spiritual practices. When a person does not hear, then we think, we take only money seriously as a matter of life or death. But when we hear spiritual knowledge, then it makes the pursuit of devotional service as more serious than the business. Without that spiritual knowledge, we only take money as a business, earning money as a business like attitude, because we take that as a life or death. But when we have spiritual knowledge, then we actually consider devotional service as actually more serious than business, because it is a matter of eternal life and repeated deaths. It's a matter of eternal life or repeated deaths. So that is what means like vyavasayatmika buddhi. So next verse Krishna says that, we'll recite this verse. Nivrittam karma seveta pravrittam matparasyajet jignyasayam sampravritto nadriyet karma chodanam.
One who has fixed me within his mind and the goal of life should give up activities based on sense gratification and should instead exude work governed by the regulative principles for advancement. When, however, one is fully engaged in searching out the ultimate truth of the soul, one should not accept the scriptural injunctions governing fruitive activities.
So here what Krishna is saying is that in the beginning stage, A person should perform the karmas without desire and offering them to Krishna. So this verse is equivalent, there are many verses in the Gita which is equivalent in the Uddhav Gita. The equivalent verse in the Bhagavad Gita is Aru Rukshur Munair Yogam Karma Karanam Uchyate Yoga Rudasya Sasyaiva Shama Karanam Uchyate. Krishna says in the 6th chapter that in the beginning stage of yoga, work is supposed to be the means. One should not give up one's one's duties, etc. One should just perform without any material desire. And in the advanced stage of yoga, cessation from activities is said to be the means. So similarly here Krishna is saying, in the beginning stage, a person should perform karmas without desire and offering them to Krishna. But in the perfected state, there is no impetus to perform karmas. It's like yoga ruda, yoga rurukshu. There is a. So here, so this verse, especially if you see the word jigyasayam sampravrittu. Jigyasayam sampravrittu means one who is fully engaged in searching out the absolute truth. For such a person, he does not need to accept any scriptural injunctions. One is engaged in searching after the absolute truth. Like in most of our cases, like devotees came searching after us. They come for program, they keep searching after us, like they kept giving prasadam. But like we, far less, some great devotees like Radhana Swami Maharaj, you heard that journey. So he went searching after the devotees. So that is what it means, jignyasayam sampravrittu. For a person who is situated on that platform, like for him, there is no need to actually perform any, such a person need not accept certain scriptural injunctions governing fruitive activities. He doesn't have the obligation to perform the injunctions governing fruitive activities. And like that's why in the beginning stage in the lesson on our level is that in the beginning stage of our devotional service, like we need physical engagement because our mind is not yet purified. Our mind cannot focus on just simply hearing and chanting for many hours, so we need physical engagement. Then when a person is purified to a certain extent, then a person takes up, then a person is given other services, which is actually, which may not involve direct physical engagement. One devotee was saying that after a few years of joining the ashram, so he asked his spiritual master, he said, I think I need some privacy or some seclusion. So this Maharaj told this Brahmachari, he said, actually you already have privacy. When you are chanting Hare Krishna, you are alone with Krishna during your japa. And when you are doing deity worship, you are alone with Krishna. So then the devotee said, he asked that question just few years, 1 or 2 years after he joined the ashram. So then, reflecting on that answer, he was saying that in the beginning itself, if you want to be alone with Krishna, actually you will be alone, we will not be alone with Krishna, we will be alone with our own mind and not with Krishna. When you are with our mind which is not yet purified, then it will actually indulge in wrong activities. Even created Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu, after coming from South Indian tour, then when he comes to Jagannath Puri, he asks, I think Kashishwar Pandit or says that, now please give me some secluded place where I can do some bhajan. So Prabhupada writes a very long purport to that. He says that Mahaprabhu is asking this question because he has done, he has travelled over South India for so many years. After that, 2 years, but then he, after doing his preaching, then he is actually asking for this. Then he says similarly, he says that only when a person is advanced, when a person has been sufficiently purified, when a person has done sufficient preaching, then a person can do like this nirjan bhajan, which does not involve some physical engagement. Otherwise, if a person is not on that level, one will actually fall down, like he mentioned. So that is more. So in the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj gives two examples. For example, he says, like when a person wants to enjoy some material sense pleasure, that is called as pravritta karma. So a religious person will enjoy the company, of a woman, but under the regulative principles of varnashram system. But however, one who is fully absorbed in spiritual advancement will ultimately give up all sense gratification derived from sexual association, either regulated or illicit. Similarly, in the stage of pravritta karma or ordinary sense gratification, one will eat whatever pleases his tongue. On the other hand, a materialistic devotee will sometimes cook sumptuous preparations and offer them to the deity, not in order to satisfy the Lord, but rather with the intention of satisfying his own tongue and belly. But however, one who is sampravritta is never interested in simply gratifying his tongue. So we'll go real fast. The next verse, Krishna says that he is explaining. So basically, in this chapter, he is talking about the nature of fruitive activity and how it actually leads to misery, etc. The next verse, he says, Yaman Abhikshnam Seveta. A person should follow the Yama Niyaman Matparakvachet, and he should also follow the Niyamas. So Yama here refers to the major regulative principles. So usually Yama Niyama refers to actually do's and don'ts. But here Yama refers to the major regulative principles and Niyama refers to the minor regulative principles. One should follow the major and minor regulative principles. Matpara, one who is dedicated to me should follow both of them. And then he says, and the third and fourth line describes about the acceptance of a guru. Mad avijnam gurum shantam. One should worship the guru who has three qualities. What are the three qualities? Mad abhigyam. Guru is one who knows my position. And second is one who is peaceful, shanta. And third quality is mad atmakam, one who is non-different from me. So the first quality is mad abhigyam, means one who has knowledge of me. Especially he says one who has knowledge of my personal form. Mad abhigyam, one who has knowledge of my personal form. And shanta means one who is peaceful. And who can be peaceful? Only one who is self-controlled. So this indicates a guru must be, or should accept a guru who is self-controlled. And third is that mad atmakam, the guru, one who is non-different from me. Why is the guru non-different from me? Because the guru is completely surrendered to the mission of the Lord. Means like, this is the third quality of the guru, one who is completely surrendered to the mission of the Lord. So one should accept, one should worship that guru who has the, one has that, one should serve that guru who has the, got these three qualities. So regarding the first two lines, one should follow the major and minor regulative principles. So major regulative principles, the example is that avoiding meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. These are major regulative principles which one should not perform at any time. One should not indulge in these forbidden activities. But the niyama refers to the minor regulative principles. For example, like the traditional example which is given is like taking 3 times a bath. So, of course, in the practical data scenario, how much it is, you may not be able, at least maybe 2 times a bath you can take. So, minor regulative principles are this is. So, he says, in the case of major regulative principles, if you break those regulative principles, it is difficult to maintain the right consciousness. Because that will actually degrade one's consciousness. But in the case of the minor regulative principles, as 3 times bath, even sometimes when you are not able to follow this, still you can maintain the right consciousness. You can still maintain the one spiritual position. But as far as possible, one try to follow the minor regulative principles also. So that is explained here. And one should not simply follow the major and minor regulative principles, but simply by following the regulative principles one cannot achieve. One has to approach the Guru. That is explained in the 3rd and 4th line. Without having a contact with the spiritual master, one cannot achieve the goal simply by following the regulative principles. And then the 6th verse, Krishna talks about the qualities of a disciple. So you are approaching a Guru, but what should be the quality of a disciple? The qualities of the Guru is explained. What are the 3 qualities which I explained? First is one who knows my personal position, me as a person. Second is peaceful. Why is he peaceful? Because he is self-controlled. Third is one is non-different from me because is completely surrendered to the mission of the Lord. So now the 6th verse he gives qualities of a disciple. He gives, I think, 6 or 7 qualities. Amani. Amani means one should be, Prabhupada translates as without false ego, or it can mean without pride. Amatsaro. That means not considering oneself to be the doer. Or it can mean without selfishness or without envy. Daksha. Daksha means here it usually it means expert, but here it means one who is without laziness. Without laziness. So maybe those who are not got initiated, even those who are initiated, it's important to meditate on these qualities for disciple. So without laziness, or it can mean that daksha can mean without laziness. And then 4th quality is nirmama, without possessiveness. And drida sauhrida. Drida sauhrida means being fixed in the mood of loving friendship with the spiritual master. Or it can mean having firm faith in the Guru and the Lord. Different meanings. And asatvara. Asatvara is important. Asatvara means without being bewildered due to material passion. Or it means basically being patient. Because when a person is passionate, he is actually impatient. So asatvara means being patient. And artha jignyashu. Artha jignyashu means one should have a desire to know the absolute truth. And amoga vak, one should be controlled in speech or completely free from useless conversation. So it's like it's good to meditate upon these qualities. So I don't want to elaborate on each and this one will go on like that. Tatrati Daksha. The spiritual master is expert in assisting the gopis in their service to Krishna. Here Daksha means actually without laziness. So 7th verse.
this term comes again and again in scriptures, offering the fruits. Fruits of activity. Can you give a little explanation?
Basically, I would say doing the,
we
cannot objectively say in the sense like offering the fruits, like for example, Rupa Goswami says, Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, one should give 50% should fall in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. But the main principle is that doing the best of according to one's capacity. So you are reading the purport, because 50% literally may not be possible, but doing the best according to one's capacity. And last week we were reading a beautiful purport, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Prabhupada says that why did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empower Rupa Goswami to be the acharya of our sampradaya? He empowered him to write like such scriptures, and he gave him spiritual knowledge. He said, because Rupa Goswami tried to perform devotional service with the best of his capacity. He says, a person will be empowered when a person puts the best of his capacity. So one is that, of course, to put that, to come to that level immediately, that may be like, the best of the capacity is like, we know that I can do much more than that, but sometimes out of enthusiasm we do something and then we become. So then at least I would say that there should be a gradual increase in the sense, in our effort in terms of quality and quantity. Like Radhika Raman Prabhu, when he came, he gave a beautiful point. He said that, so every day we should think that, okay, let me do something more than what I did previously, what I did yesterday. Okay, let me do maybe at least maybe 10 Mahamantras extra, or one round extra, or let me improve my quality a little better compared to previously, or let me do something, I gave for Janmashtami something, so let me do something more. So at least on a day-to-day basis we can have an increase in certain this one. And ultimately the principle is that doing the best of one's capacity. And that actually, that pleases the Lord, and the Lord empowers the person. So, seventh verse. So in this verse he continues the qualities of a disciple. And another way to see the connection between the previous verse and this verse is that in the previous verse he had used the word nirmama without having a sense of proprietorship. So in this verse he explains how to give up the sense of false proprietorship. That is explained in the verse. Or he also continues the qualities of a disciple. You can read the translation, seventh verse.
One should see one's real self-interest in life and all circumstances, and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on.
So, it's like that he's explaining that. He's giving further talking about how to not have lack possessiveness. And then, yeah, there's one more point which Vishnu Chakravarti mentions here is that, like here in this seventh verse, Krishna talks about one should not have possessiveness towards these things, relatives, friends, wealth, land, etc. But with respect to the spiritual master and the Lord, the principle is drida saugrada. One should have a strong attachment towards them. One should have possessiveness towards the spiritual master and the Lord. There the principle is opposite. This principle is to be applied towards these things. So there is another yeah. And then in the next verse Krishna says that essentially what he is saying is that both the spirit soul body and the spirit soul are different. Spirit soul is different from the body, just like firewood is different from the fire that illuminates the Just simple basic Gita philosophy. Body is different from the soul, just like firewood is different from the fire that illuminates it. So just one point. So in this verse, the eighth verse, the living entity is called as Swadruk. The spirit soul is called as Swadruk. Swadruk means, literally means self-enlightened. Self-enlightened. So why is the soul called self-enlightened? Because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that although the Supreme Lord certainly furnishes consciousness to the living entity being endowed with the potency of the Lord has himself the capacity to revive and expand his pure consciousness. So therefore, he may be considered in a secondary sense self-enlightened. Ultimately, the Supreme Lord is self-enlightened. But even the living entities also can also be called a self-enlightened in a secondary sense, because he has been given that potency by the Supreme Lord to actually to revive and expand his pure consciousness. So next verse, the ninth verse, the extension of the same analogy is given, fire analogy. So the fire analogy is that, like, fire is covered within the wood. So similarly, because of ignorance, we identify ourselves with the body. And when the fire comes out, the fire actually burns the wood. Similarly, when a person gets spiritual knowledge, that spiritual knowledge burns the ignorance. That is the first analogy. And the second part of the analogy is that is explained in the ninth verse. That is, fire may assume different size according to the different objects. So similarly, the soul may assume the characteristics of the body according to the body it occupies. But essentially, this just like the same fire is there in different objects. We cannot say this is a different fire. It's just a different shape of fire is depending on the size of the object. So similarly, although the same soul is present in every body, although depending on the body, it may appear, oh, he is a fat person, this is a thin person. But actually the same spirit soul is there. The second part of the analogy. The third part of the analogy is that... The same soul is present in every body, although by the external body it appears that a person may think, oh, he is actually a fat soul, he is actually a fat person or a thin person, or is like that. Just like the same fire is actually there and maybe burning in the different wood, although it may be having the different size.
Same soul
when we say it looks like. Yeah, the same soul means in a sense, I'm not saying that one soul, but the same spirit soul. There are individual, there are different souls are there in every body, but it's not that that size of the soul is actually big in somebody's. And the same spirit soul of 1 by 10,000 of a tip of a hair, qualitatively having the same qualities, is existing.
For the fire, it's like actually the same fire, we can say. Like for the soul, we say that same characteristic soul. Same fire energy.
Like some energy of fire is stored in some place, some stored in some place. And another part of the analogy is that, just like from the fire itself, the third part of the analogy is that, like, fire sometimes appears and sometimes disappears, but we know the fire element is always present. Sometimes it may appear and disappear, but the fire element is always present. So similarly, the soul is sometimes present in the body and then it departs from the body, but even so, the soul is always eternal. And then the 10th verse, Krishna says that the Vidya potency of the Lord cuts the bondage of ignorance upon the living entity. The knowledge potency of the Lord cuts this bondage of ignorance upon the living entity. And then the 11th verse, Krishna says that one should give up this bodily conception by careful analysis and inquiry and by increasing one's sadhana. You can just read the 11th verse. We will just complete it. Just one more verse.
Translation?
Yeah, translation.
Therefore, by the cultivation of knowledge, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within oneself. By understanding the Lord's pure transcendental existence, one should gradually give up the false vision of the material world as independent reality.
So here is explaining basically that tasmat jigyasaya, by cultivation of knowledge, or it means by careful analysis and inquiry, and Vishnu Chakotaku says, and also by increasing one's sadhana, then a person can give up the bodily concept of life. So that means it is not that simply by analysis, that analysis should also include actually putting our effort in our sadhana. The scriptural reading scriptures are not just meant for analysis but for practical action. And by that a person can come out of the bodily concept of life. And then the 12th verse Krishna explains, gives an analogy how the knowledge obtained from the guru destroys the ignorance. He explains through an analogy. So the analogy he is giving is that guru is like the lower kindling arani wood, and disciple is like the upper arani wood, and the instruction given by the guru to the disciple is like the third stick which is placed in between the upper and lower arani wood. And the transcendental knowledge communicated from the guru to disciple, that is compared to the fire arising from the contact of these three arani woods, which actually consumes all the three arani woods. The transcendental knowledge actually burns the darkness of ignorance to ashes, and it brings great happiness both to the guru and disciple. So that is how Krishna explains in the 12th verse. And then the 13th verse, Krishna says that I think I'll stop here and then we'll continue from the next week. So next week we'll definitely have the test. Next week.
For 8 chapters or 8 and 9.
Next week we'll have a test on 8 chapters.
Because MCQs,
I can send it to me in Yeah, you can send. I have not sent the format. You can make the MCQs. I will send the format today, tomorrow. But you can type the MCQs, you just have to copy paste in that document. Questions I will send by email only. This week also I couldn't get time. I thought of giving some filling banks for the test, but then because the class got over late, so I didn't. So next week we'll have the test definitely. So I'll be going a little more faster. I want to have one chapter a week, but within 5 months I can finish that actually. So I'm just giving an overview of this one, just reading out this one. But you please try to go through the chapters. Now the main thing is that we develop a habit of reading Prabhupada's books. So do not depend on, okay, whatever questions I am going to give, only just read only that particular section. We should try to read through the sun, and that will actually help. But there are many purports which are very profound, and as I just read through some of the purports.
Maybe can I do this today, because 20 seconds I have a counselor's meeting at work.
For the 8th chapter.
I can give now.
You give at home and give, because I am not prepared.
So you will give me the questions? I am prepared now. Twice I prepared, last time on this side also. The old age goes away fast.
I will send you the questions
by
email.
What about the...
Because they will know.
Okay, you can mail me. What I want. This receipt you will be giving me, or I have to go to base?
Father, I'll give. Just 100. Mahatma.
My brother was puzzled. He was surprised. He said that you are going, I have been to Nagpur. He said you are going back to write an exam. This way you are. He is teaching in college. He said we teach, but we give exam. So only one thing is that burning desire of learning is there, no?
That learning attitude, that we should keep it alive actually.
That is why I am very grateful to this.
You are so long.
7 years they are tolerated.
प्रभु कृपा करने का डिपार्टमेंट आपका
है। कूपन है, राधा रानी नाराज हो गए, हम लोग को नहीं बुलाया।
इस बार बुलाएगी ना।
हरि बोल।
You are powerful. And what? How are you?
Long time.
Very well.
घर जा रहा हूँ मैं। यहाँ पे
अरे
वो
अरे यार तू कोई जीत नहीं पाएगा।
चल एक मिनट ये अंदर देना, अभी लेक्चर था ना तो रिकॉर्डिंग करके अंदर वो साइट में अपलोड कर देंगे।
हाँ
बंद नहीं किया, देखिए कैसे बंद करते हैं, इसके लिए वो छोड़ दिए।